Well, this is a little deeper in the service than usual, but good morning, church. Usually I've hit you with that by now. As we dive in together this morning, I invite you to turn in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 14. Now, if you don't, either you have your physical Bible, you got a phone Bible, that'll work great. If you don't have either one of those, then you can turn in your pew Bible in front of you this morning to page 796. I did the homework for you. 796. Matthew chapter 14. I'm actually not going to have any slides on the screen this morning, including the scriptures. We're going to be in this story together this morning. So I figured, hey, let's just be right in the text together. You know, as I enter into today being my last Sunday at Countryside Covenant Church in the role of worship arts director, I've been called to a new adventure, and that's been a process that the Lord has been working out in my life over the last 6 to 8 months, I would say. And this story in particular has been one that I've very much identified with. The story of Jesus walking on water and calling Peter out of the boat, and then Peter walking on water that we're going to go through this morning. And if you're wondering, you know, Reba talked about it a little bit, but I'm not entirely sure what I'm doing next. I just know I've been called to jump. And so this very much feels like a leap of faith, a moment of stepping out of the boat and walking on water and just following Jesus wherever he invites me to go. So this morning as we enter in, we're going to start in verse 22 together. You'll see the heading maybe in your translation of the scriptures, where it says Jesus walks on water. I think it's important for us, as we enter into the story, to recognize that immediately before this story, the disciples and Jesus are just getting done with the miracle when Jesus took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and then fed thousands of people with 5 loaves and 2 fish. Right? He'd been teaching people. They'd been a long way from any sort of food. People were running out of food. They were hungry. They were thinking, do we need to, you know, send them away to go get food? Do we need to go buy food and bring it to them so they can continue to hear the teachings of Jesus? What do we do? What do we do? What do we do? And a small boy brings his lunch to Jesus, gives it to Jesus. Jesus looks to heaven, gives thanks to his heavenly Father, breaks it, and then just keeps passing it out, right? Just keeps passing it out and passing it out. And all of a sudden, thousands of people were eating the food that he kept passing out, and they had an abundance, right? They had 12 baskets left over. That's the story that we're coming out of, starting in verse 22. It says, immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Did you see what Jesus just did? He just hit his disciples with the, I'm going to drive separate. I'm going to drive separate. I'm going to meet you all there. I'm a little peopled out, and as an introvert, I can really resonate with this part of Jesus. He's going, I just hung out with thousands of strangers, and it was great. It was good, and I love you all, but I need some time. He sends them across the lake, and he says, I'll meet you there. I'll meet you there. Later that night, he was there alone. Again, he was on a mountainside by himself to pray. And the boat was already a considerable distance from the land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. That had to be a weird experience for the disciples, right? It says later that night. So a significant part of the night, at least, the disciples had been rowing into a headwind. You think they were a little confused about that? They're like, Jesus just broke, you know, 5 loaves and 2 fish and fed 1,000 people lunch. We had leftovers. He told us to get in the boat, which we did. He said, go across the lake, I'll meet you there, which we did. And now we're doing exactly what Jesus said, but we're struggling. We're struggling. All right? Have you ever felt like you've heard Jesus say something, ask you to do something, and you did it, and you weren't making any progress? Verse 25. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and they cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately, that's important, immediately said to them, "Hey, take courage. It's I. It's me. It's Jesus. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid." I think it makes a little sense that the disciples were afraid in that moment, right? They've been rowing. Now it says shortly before dawn, so now we know they've been rowing all night, getting nowhere. I'm sure they're experiencing so many different emotions. They're probably arguing with each other. Should we keep going or should we turn around? Jesus told us to go the other side. We've got to go to the other side. I know, but did he know that we were going to row into a headwind? We're not getting there. We need to turn around. We're in danger, right? I imagine this conversation happening. And they're still rowing and they're still going and they're still going. And then they turn and there's winds in their face, water splashing in the boat. They turn and there's a man on the water. Understandably, they came to the conclusion, it's a ghost. Why? Because men don't walk on water. That's not a thing that people do, right? So they cried out in fear, right? But immediately, right? Jesus doesn't just leave them hanging. Like, he doesn't toy with them in their fear. He's not like, I'm going to pull a fast one on them and let them just suffer for a little bit. No, immediately, Jesus self-identifies. He says, hey, it's me. Take courage, it's I. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. It's me. And as usual, Peter is the first one to say something. Verse 28, we see it right here. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come out to you on the water. I bet the disciples had to be like, okay, oh no, Peter, not again. Like, we've talked about this, man. You got to stop making these kinds of bold statements, these irrational statements that you just can't back up. Like, you're the first one to always say something or do it, and you're batting about, 200 as far as actually following through on what you're going to say. The scriptures say that, if everything that Jesus said and did was written down, there wouldn't be enough books to fill it. I like to imagine, how many things did Peter say to what Jesus said that just didn't quite work out, right? Didn't quite get there. Well, we've got one right here. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come out to you on the water. And I like to imagine Peter in this instance is a little bit like that friend you had in high school who just had some irrational boldness and confidence. You know who I'm talking? Can you picture that person in your mind? If you can't, it might be you. That person, at least in like my friend group in high school growing up, where you like, dude, you pretty much try to just ask out every girl you can and you just keep getting rejected, right? Are you going to learn your lesson to not just approach people or to approach women and just try to like go get them to go on a date with you? Like, they're way out of your league, dude. You got to stop. And then it'd be like sitting one day at lunch and you're just minding your own business with your friends, and then all of a sudden you see that friend start to beeline for that girl, and you're like, oh no, bro, not again. Like, you gotta stop it. And you're trying to like wave him down, like, don't do it. Don't do it. And he doesn't see you because he's focused. He's made up his mind and he's going. And you're like, this is not gonna end well again. And then you see the conversation happening, and then you notice, is she smiling? Is she blushing a little bit? Is she into him? That girl is way out of his league. I can't believe is she actually saying, is it? And she says yes. How does Jesus respond to Peter? Peter says, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come out to you on the water. And what does Jesus say? Come. The disciples had to be like, wait. What? What? Verse, where are we at? 29, halfway through. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on water, and came towards Jesus. Wow. I've got some questions. How did he get out of the boat? Right? Was this like a, you sit on the edge of the boat and kind of like swing your legs around, like hold on to the boat, test the water, put a foot in, is it holding me? Okay. And then like slowly stand up and kind of, oh my goodness, just kind of like start and see Jesus and just start walking towards him. Were the disciples helping Peter out of the boat? Like making sure, just in case he started to sink, they were there? Or did he, like Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, some of you know what I'm talking about, where he's just like, leap of faith, just take the step and trust that Jesus is going to catch him on the water? I think a more important question for us this morning is, how did Peter get to the point where he was willing to step out of the boat, where he was ready, where he actually did it? And I think there's two things from this story that are particularly important on that question. Point one, I think it shows that Peter was at the end of himself. Remember, the disciples had been rowing all night into the wind. All night. Probably experiencing a certain amount of fear, confusion, frustration, maybe anger. Maybe they're a little afraid for their lives. And then they turn, right? They see what they think is a ghost, fearful experience, right? They had to be experiencing something of being at the end of themselves. Have you ever gotten to the point at the end of a day or a week or a month? Things were really hard, and you were just at the end. You were just like, I can't do it. I can't do it. And you're starting to turn it over to Jesus because you're like, I can't do it. You got to do it. Maybe you got some news from a family member you don't know what to do with. Like, I can't handle this. Like, I got to give it to somebody else because I can't. I think Peter was at the I can't stage. The second thing is, I believe Peter had experienced a paradigm shift through the experiential the experience of Jesus' power, right? Remember the story that this is coming out of, 5 loaves, 2 fish, fed everybody. Before that moment, if you would have asked Peter, hey, can you take 5 loaves and 2 fish and feed thousands of people? He would have said, understandably, no. But then he saw Jesus do it, and now his conclusion is, okay, well, no, but unless Jesus, then it can happen. And then, again, before this evening, if you would have asked Peter, can people walk on water, he would have said, no. But then he saw Jesus do it. And now his answer is, okay, people can walk on water if Jesus is a part of the equation. Right? Why did he step out of the boat? Because he knew and trusted and witnessed the power of the one who was calling him out. And he stepped. He asked, right? That's what Bobby talked about during the worship set. He asked, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come out to you. He listened. Jesus said, come. And then he did it. You know, when I was going into college, at the end of my high school experience, my senior year was particularly difficult. Just felt like there were a lot of things that I was wrestling with, a lot of loss, a lot of things just not feeling like they're not going my way, a lot of confusion. And I've come to appreciate that moment in my life because it was really the start of my, like, taking on my faith as my own. And so I appreciate that. But there's this moment at the end of my senior year, as I was about to go into college, where I was wrestling with a lot of questions. God, what do you want me to do? I'm struggling with this. I don't have answers for this. So I decided to fast and pray for 3 days, which for me is a long time. And as I'm fasting and praying over these 3 days, I'm not getting the answers that I'm looking for. Anybody relate to that? And it's frustrating and it's confusing and I don't understand. I had this experience at the end of the third day where I was praying and I felt like Jesus said, Connor, do you trust me? I said, yes, Lord, of course. I trust you. That's why I'm praying and fasting and seeking you. I need to... I just felt like he kind of was like, Connor, do you trust me? And again, I gave the same answer. Yeah, of course I trust you. You know, that's why I'm praying and seeking you. Why are you asking me this again? And Jesus asked me a third time. And we know that when Jesus asks something three times, we should pay attention. So, Connor, do you trust me? So I kind of said, I think so. I just felt like he impressed on me, prove it. And all of a sudden, it became very clear to me that my faith and my trust in him wasn't based on him, but on the answers that I wanted him to give me. Anybody relate to that? I was getting stuck on the how question. It's like Peter getting called out of the boat, right? And Jesus is like, okay, come. And then Peter going, okay, but how do you want me to get into the water? Right? What book do you want me to read? The 7 steps to like walking on water that I can learn how to do this so that I can come out to you. Right? Jesus doesn't give him any of those and he doesn't need any of them. He just does it. I think when we get stuck on how questions, which I'm very familiar with doing, I think it's a good clue that our sense of security lies in the answers themselves instead of the one who's giving them. So do you trust Jesus? Or is your trust, like me oftentimes, conditional on his answers? Anyways, Peter got out of the boat, walked on water, came towards Jesus. That's where we're at. Verse 30, but when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out, Lord, save me! Save me. What happened? He was actively walking on water. This wasn't like before walking on water. He was doing it. What happened? In his vision, Jesus was here, and everything else was back here. And then he noticed the wind, and they shifted places. Right? All of a sudden, the wind was here, and Jesus was back here, and Peter's fear led him away from looking at the one who was allowing him to walk on the water. Part of what I feel like God's asking me to step into as I step away from Countryside is this ministry that I've co-founded with some people called Pop Culture Redemption. In this ministry, we feel like we're called to help the church, help Christians become Christ's ambassadors, to help overcome their fear of the world, to be able to go into the world and engage with the world in a healthy way, and to represent Christ to the world. Because I think oftentimes it can be so easy for us to retreat from the world, because we can be afraid of it, we can be afraid of its influence on us. We experience a certain level of guilt or shame, like what if people knew that I liked that movie or watched that show or listened to that song? You know, that kind of stuff, and we kind of disengage from the harvest fields that Jesus is asking us to walk into. And so I'm going to do a pop culture plug here as we go in, because I think it can be helpful for us as we look at other stories and we see how other stories, like the gospel isn't just a better story, but the gospel makes sense of all other stories. So we can look at all other stories, see where God's at, and point people to him. Okay, so I'm going to use a story this morning. And that story is from Harry Potter. In book 3, there's this creature that comes on the scene in Harry Potter, if you've read the books or seen the movie or whatever. There's this creature called a boggart that appears. Yeah, somebody over here knows what I'm talking about. And a boggart is just this creature that transforms itself into whatever the person in front of them fears the most. I was like, that'll preach. Right? Your worst fear. So in the book, as students come before the boggart, it changes. And then the next student comes up, and then it changes form into whatever that person fears. And then on down the line. And the students have to figure out how do we confront and move beyond this boggart. Because even though the boggart doesn't have any power of the form it's taking, the students still paralyze in fear at it, even though it doesn't have any actual power. I'm like, well, the Bible says something similar, right? 2 Timothy 1:7. We have not been given a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and self-discipline. Y'all, Satan is a boggart. Satan is trying to use fear to keep us from going where Jesus wants us to go. And he'll try to distract us while we're on the path. Just like Peter, seeing Jesus in front of him. All of a sudden, the wind kind of comes between him and Jesus. And he starts to look at the wind and become afraid. And the boggart helps us realize that the truth, that fear actually has no power over you except the attention and the power that you decide to give to it. So you want an idea of where Jesus is asking you to go? A litmus test that has been helpful for me over the last few months is, where am I experiencing fear in my life? Jesus might be inviting you right into that space and to go beyond it and move through it, because Satan is trying to put up a boundary. For so long, I resisted the call to ministry. I knew from very young that, you know, I started playing piano when I was 6 years old because the worship pastor at my church played piano. And I was like, I want to be like that guy when I grow up. 6 years old, that's what I thought. Third grade, I made a poster in school. It's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I was like, I want to be a pastor like my dad. That was on the poster, right? But in high school and early college, I felt very much like Jonah, running from that call. So I saw the difficulty, I saw the challenge of ministry. I was like, you know what, I don't want any of that. But the bigger issue in my life was, and still is, I was afraid that God wasn't going to provide what I needed. And that kept me from doing it. I can remember halfway into my freshman year of college, being a part of a campus ministry called the Navigators at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln. It was amazing. It was amazing for my spiritual development and my journey. And I found myself, all of my free time was going to that, because that's what I love to do. That was my passion. I want to do life groups. I want to do Bible studies. I was looking forward to Nav Night when I got to lead worship. I was thinking about all those things. And all the business classes over here, just, they were good, but that wasn't my thing. And I wasn't interested in any of it, interested in ministry. So I finally went in after my freshman year with open hands to the Lord and said, Lord, I'm experiencing the joy and the passion of living into the call that you've put on my life. I'm still afraid, but I'm willing to let go of it if you want me to do it. If you call me to do it, I'll do it. So I said that, felt called into ministry that summer in a really impactful way. And after my sophomore year, decided to transfer to North Park University and do worship ministry, which, if you don't know, North Park is the Covenant, the Evangelical Covenant Church college and school in Chicago. So I went into that. Fast forward 3 years, I'd interned here at the church 2 summers while I was at college. And going into my last year, Pastor John and I had a conversation where that summer ended. He said, Connor, you know, if we're not really going to wait for you to like graduate next year intentionally, but if the position is still open, because at that time they had an interim worship director for quite a long time, they were still looking for a worship person. He said, call me at Thanksgiving break, we'll set up an interview over like Christmas break or something, and we'll see where things go. I said, okay. So Thanksgiving came. No worship director here at the church still. So I decided, I gave John a call. Hey, I'm going to be in Central Kansas. Do you still want to set up an interview? He said, absolutely. So we did an interview. I'll never forget where I was when I got the call. I was at school, Christmas break. Hey, this is Countryside. We would like to extend to you the full-time worship arts director position, full salary, full benefits, the whole thing lined up. We'll wait for you to graduate in May. It's lined up. It'll be here when you're done. That doesn't happen, in case you're wondering. I graduated with 10 other worship majors, and I'm thinking through all of them. None of them had a job lined up in December before they graduate in May, I'll tell you that. And very few of them even had a full-time position in May when they got done. I just felt like God was like, Connor, if I call you to do something, I'm going to provide. It'll be okay. I've got this. But again, in the story, Peter takes his eyes off Jesus, and he begins to sink because he was focused on the resistance, which is so easy for us to do. Verse 31, what happens when Peter's sinking? Immediately, there's that word again, immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. Pulled him up. Said, you of little faith, he said, why did you doubt? Right? Immediately Jesus caught Peter, because that's who Jesus is. I feel like a lot of us can be like a child standing on the edge of a pool who doesn't know how to swim, right? Maybe it's the first time being at the pool, and you see all the fun that's happening out here, and all the children and the adults having a good time, but you don't know how to swim. And rightfully so, you're a little nervous about the water because the water poses a danger. But what happens? Your parent, your mom, your dad, swims out in front of you, right there, and they extend their arms to you and say, look at me, jump. I'll catch you. I'm going to catch you. Like, look at me. Look at all the fun that people are having in here. I can show you how to swim. I'll do it. I'll be right here. I won't let you sink. Jump. Just jump. Don't look at the water. Look at me. Look at me. Jump. I'm going to catch you. Right? Parents like, I would sooner drown than let any part of you sink. Parents like, I would sooner die than let any part of you perish. Does that remind you of the cross? Right. And why does the child jump? Does the child jump because all of a sudden the child knows how to swim? No. Does the child jump because it's any less afraid of the water? No. The child jumps because the child trusts her father. And the child believes that her father's power is greater than that of the water. And the child believes that the father has good things for her. So she looks at the father, and she jumps. I believe our inability oftentimes to overcome our fears is not because our fears are so great. I think for a lot of us, it's our picture of Jesus. His love for us, his power, it's too small. And we're stuck on the side of the pool of our lives. And Jesus is saying, look at me. Look at me. I am the Alpha and the Omega. I am the beginning and the end. I am the first and the last. I am the creator of all things. By me, all things have been made. I am the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. I am the pioneer and perfecter of faith. Right? I am your rest, your shield, your comfort, the lover of your soul, your security, and I am the good shepherd. And I lay down my life for my sheep. And if you think that any of my sheep are going to be attacked or become lost, then you don't know me. Because I'm the good shepherd. I am. Do we believe him? Do we believe that he is who he says he is? That he holds the power that he says he does? That he loves us beyond what we can fathom? Because sometimes I don't. I think some of us are stuck in our own little boats, looking to keep away from the fear and the lies the enemy is putting out on the open waters. And we're stuck. Or maybe perhaps we do hear the call of Jesus and we want to go to him, but we're trying to row our boats to him. Right? The boats of our fears and insecurities. And yet we're buffeted by the waves and the wind and the resistance, and we're not making any progress. And Jesus is telling us, just get out of the boat. I didn't make you for the boat. I didn't die so you could just stay in the boat. I died and resurrected so that you can live on the open waters. You can come out here and walk with me. I'll give you the power. I'll give you the strength. By me, you'll do it, right? Don't listen to the lies of the boggart that tries to paralyze us with our fear. Don't listen. Jesus is saying, listen to me, look at me. Don't look over here, right? Don't listen to the people, the well-meaning people who are still in the boat telling you, don't step out of the water, don't step out of the boat, you're going to drown, right? Logic and reason, that makes sense. Don't step out of the boat, you're going to drown. You're saying, but I heard Jesus, and he told me to get out. Don't listen to them, listen to Jesus, right? Listen to the one who created you and all things. Listen to the one who makes you more than a conqueror, right? And step by step, fix your eyes on Jesus, as Hebrews 12 tells us, the pioneer and perfecter of faith, right? And when we miss it, those moments when fear distracts us and we get caught in it, and we cry out to Jesus when we begin to feel like we're sinking, he immediately catches us. Oh, thanks be to God. I've been stuck in the boat of my life for a long time, and in many ways I still am. I think all of us in here, there's little boats in our life that Jesus is calling us out of that we're having a tough time letting go of. Right? And then we let go of one of them and we step out, and then all of a sudden we find out, oh, there's another one that I'm holding back, and then we step out and we find, oh, there's another one. And it's just this continual process of God's grace working in our life, right? The beauty is that the love and care of Jesus is, yes, he's out on the open waters inviting us, but he's also right next to you in the boat, right? Comforting you. He says, I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. When you're mine, I'm right here with you, right? I was having a particularly hard conversation with my counselor that I've met with for a long time, and there was something in my life that I just kept not being able to reconcile with the Lord. I just felt like the Lord just wasn't letting me go. Why am I not experiencing peace in this? Like, I just struggle, and I want to leave it. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to deal with this anymore, and yet I still, he's just not letting me go. And he said to me, my counselor, Connor, maybe God's love for you is too great to let you go. Maybe his love for you is too great to let you stay in the boat. Again, we come back to ask God, listen, and then do it. And the truth is that obedience to Jesus in this way, right, feels like death when we step out of the boat, because we're crucifying our flesh and its passions and desires. We're leaving behind our old selves and we're living out and stepping into our new selves with him. Obedience to Jesus, while it does feel like little deaths, is also our greatest life, because we live more and more into who Jesus is calling us to be. Obedience to Jesus is our greatest adventure. It's our greatest fulfillment. It's our greatest passion and purpose. And the devil tries to lie to us. The devil tries to keep us stuck in fear. But the truth is that we have not been given a spirit of fear, but of power, love, and self-discipline. So get out of the boat. You want to experience more of Christ's divine power in your life? The divine power of walking on water? You got to get out of the boat. Got to risk it all. Verse 32. And when they climbed into the boat and the wind died down, then those who were in the boat worshipped him, Jesus, saying, "Truly you are the Son of God." Right? Through your act of faith, through Peter's act of faith, getting out of the boat, Jesus got the glory. When we step out of the boat in our life and we risk it all for Jesus when he calls us to, and we do what he says, even though we don't know how it's going to work out, we don't know how we're going to do it, and we go, it's got to be God or nothing else, our lives become obvious testimonies of God's power. Because Peter didn't get back in the boat, and the disciples were like, "Wow, Peter, you're amazing." Peter got back in the boat, and the disciples were like, "Wow, Jesus, you're amazing. Your power is obvious." Because we know Peter can't walk on water by himself. We know this. We know this. When we listen to Jesus and step out of the boats in our life, when he calls us, again, we become obvious testimonies. How did your marriage turn around? How did that happen? I saw where your marriage was, and I see where it is now. What happened? Jesus. Jesus. Called me out of the boat, get help, the help that we needed. Actually started to confront some of my fears and insecurities, and then he just transformed our marriage. You used to be such an angry person and spiteful, but now you're just so full of joy in life. What happened? Jesus. Just like the 5 loaves and 2 fish, right? Not possible to feed 5,000 people. Jesus. Okay, now it's possible because of Jesus. It's not possible to walk on water. Jesus did it. Okay, I guess it's possible with Jesus. It's what Paul later writes to the Philippians, right? He says, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." Jesus gets the glory when we step out of the boat. Why are you quitting your job with no plan for another one? Unsure of what the destination looks like? Because I heard Jesus call me to do it, and he'll provide. Imagine a church and a community of believers, all of us in our different ways and the ways Jesus is calling us, stepping out of our boats and walking on water. Can you imagine the testimonies in this room that would happen immediately? Can you imagine the life change that would happen in people in your lives and in our community that see you walking on water and go, "Hold on, what? What happened here?" And you go, "Jesus." Imagine the glory that would be made known when the people of God, empowered by the Spirit of God, step out in faith. It's our deepest living.